Welcome back. It's the Jude 23 Community Podcast. It's clarity for those who are curious and or confused about all things Christianity. I'm Jeremiah Wood, and alongside me is our host for the program, Mr. Nick Hardcastle. I should be saying Dr. Nick Hardcastle. One of the things that is important in the podcasting world is people really want to get to know not just the information, but they want to get to know you and I as individuals. So Dr. Nick Hardcastle, why don't you give us about 2 minutes about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I can do that. I'm not a doctor in the sense of the resuscitate or keep you alive type thing.
Medical doctor?
Not a medical doctor, the one with the old PhD at the end. Definitely don't mind going by Nick, but I do have a doctorate in animal science, specifically focused on like meat science. Mm-hmm. So if that's the weirdest thing you've ever heard, yeah, it probably is. That's okay. You know, you can get a doctorate of philosophy in just about anything, but you know, what I focus on is really just, trying to maximize the value of our beef supply chain. And just trying to make sure that we have an efficient, safe source of food. So, yeah, that's largely what I do. And I'm happy to do it. You know, people have to eat, and I really don't mind participating in that.
And then your wife does something similar to that, too, correct?
Yeah. We're both meatheads. You know, I actually told a story the other day that we're both meatheads, and we have a small dog named Patrick. He's not small. He's only small in age. He's 8 months old, but he weighs probably about 75 pounds. He's a golden retriever. He found a dead bird in the yard the other day, so he became a meathead also after he ate that. So we're a house full of meatheads. That's the easiest way to say it. Yeah.
That's good. Well, hey, let's go ahead and jump into our episode tonight. We are diving into Genesis chapter 4, and this is the story of Cain and Abel. And I'm just going to read a little bit. I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but I want to read this kind of the main part.
Yep.
Starting in verse 1, chapter 4, verse 1, it says, "Now Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore Cain and said, 'I have acquired a man from the Lord.' Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of the sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flocks and their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but God did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance began to fall. So the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you so angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it.' Now Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass, when they were out in the field, that Cain rose up against his brother and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, 'Where is Abel, your brother?' Cain said, 'I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?' And he said, 'What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth and received your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you. A fugitive and a vagabond you shall be on this earth.' And then Cain said to the Lord, 'My punishment is greater than I can bear. Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond on the earth, and it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me.' And the Lord said to him, 'Therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold.' And the Lord set a mark on Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him." So a lot of really interesting points here. But one of the things that I really wanted to start out with today is kind of a recap of what we kind of ended last week's show with, And that is kind of the general progressive nature of sin. And so when we walk back through the fall of man with Adam and Eve through Genesis chapter 3, when God came back into the garden and was calling for Adam and Eve, saying, Adam, where are you? The first consequence of sin was the shame that Adam and Eve both felt. So if you remember back in Genesis chapter 2, when God created Adam and Eve, they were created and it said that they were naked and unashamed. And so when sin entered the picture, it kind of revealed to them their nakedness and at the same time created shame between the two of them. And they sewed themselves fig leaves together. And so sin had already started this progressive deteriorating process. And then when God showed up, it continued to progress because not only were they feeling shame, now they were blaming one another for the sin that was committed. And after this whole blame game began, there was now this broken relationship between Adam and Eve with God. There was this broken relationship with Adam and Eve between one another. And now there was also this broken relationship with Adam and Eve and all of creation. And it's starting to progress. And so now when we're in Genesis chapter 4, we see the progression continue. So let's start back at verse 1 and talk about this, because it said, Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore Cain and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. Now, why do you think Eve giving birth to a son was such a big deal for her?
Oh, yeah. This is a fun thing to talk about. Actually, this whole entire chapter, you can really get into some really fun stuff to talk about. And honestly, you start reading it, you kind of think that you've just reread in a general sense a little bit of Genesis 2 and Genesis 3, all kind of re-represented back here in this story. So, you know, one thing that I've always taken away, that why is it important that she bore man, that she bore a son? And that's because, you know, one of the things that happened in there, whenever there was this fracture, whenever Eve became known as the fact that she was a mother, she was actually giving that identity by a man, by her husband, Adam, through a broken through a break in their relationship. I'm not going to say their relationship was broken, but whenever he changed her name from woman to, Eve, he pretty much sat there and said that you are going to be known by your identity of what you can produce. So she produced man who identified, or who chose to identify her by what she can do. She also was taken out of man, and the significance of the fact that she was taken out of man and really the fracture in the relationship they had, that there was kind of honestly a tear to the relationship that became an Adam and Eve. So she was able to actually produce a man via the help of the Lord. She was able to somewhat kind of continue in a sin process of usurping the fact that her husband is not the only one that has to identify with these things. Now she can also produce man in that way. So that's one way that this kind of story starts out to me. And what do you think, Jeremiah? What's it mean to you?
Well, if you go back to like verse 14, then this is when God came and discovered that Adam and Eve had sinned and eaten the fruit that they were not supposed to eat. And he said to the serpent, so the Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, you are cursed more than all the cattle and more than every beast on the field. And on your belly you shall go, and you shall eat the dust all the days of your life. Verse 15, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, and he shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. So this was a prophecy of God telling the serpent and telling Adam and telling Eve, like, here is the situation. So serpent, here is your consequence. But in that consequence, there's also this glimmer of hope. And that glimmer of hope is for Adam and Eve, not for the serpent. He said, there will be enmity between you and the woman. And then there will also be enmity between you and her seed. But the seed of the woman will come and crush your head, and make all things new. So we talked about this is what scripture is all about, right? The scripture is all about the story of God's ongoing redemptive work in the world. And so when we're talking about God's ongoing redemptive work in the world, we're starting with Adam and Eve, and God is telling Adam and Eve, listen, Eve, your seed, there will come from you a man who is going to defeat Satan and sin and recorrect and make everything right again. And from your seed will that man crush the head of the snake that has done this to you. And I think, personally, when Eve bore Cain, she saw that she had a son, and this son, how do you say this? To her, this son was the fulfillment of God's promise that God was going to restore all things back together again. And so now that she has borne a son, this is the man that's going to crush the head of the serpent and restore shalom back to the garden.
That's good. I never even thought about that way. I went to the opposite end, that there was something else happening here, you know? But that would make sense, that there was some restoration happening. And probably really in the entirety of the fact, it's that restoration still could have came through him. And we could talk about that more kind of as we progress throughout the rest of this story. Mm-hmm. But there was a clear decision made a little bit later that, you know, probably restoration could have been fulfilled or been continued in, or there could have been negative consequences of choosing sin, which happened later on. But
yeah,
I love that. I love that. This is why we don't rehearse this before time. We get some honest reactions. And that you said some good stuff in your day, and that was a good one. I like that. 3:15 prophecy.
Thank you. Thank you. And here's what didn't originate from me. I just learned it from my Bible teachers. But all that to be said, Milton Hubbard, that's a shout out to you, my friend. One of the things that I think that's important to remember also is even from the very beginning, like when you read through the New Testament, you always look at, especially in a lot of these pastoral books, like that Paul's epistles, he's always talking like he believes that the return of Christ was happening in his lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a natural longing of the believing heart, because it started with Eve longing for the restoration of all things, this restoration of shalom. And so she's longing for God to send his promise to restore all things back to shalom. Paul and the apostles were longing for Jesus to come back in their lifetime to restore all things back into perfect shalom. And I think that as believers, the closer we become to, the closer we draw near to Christ, the more we taste and see just how good the Lord is. And the more we taste and see how good the Lord is, the more our hearts begin to long for the restoration of all things back to this place of shalom.
Yeah. And I think that's also just, I mean, participation in the restoration is a big thing that we're called to do. The kingdom of shalom or Christ can come whenever you act like Christ to one another. And you help God in restoring his process, in restoring what he tried to do from the beginning of stewarding a good creation through good people. And really in just sharing love to one another. So I think that's a big thing. That's like the thing that is opposed in this story. Especially whenever Cain has his reactions later, it's like God gave him the option, trying to kind of give him a little bit of a pep talk, saying that you have the opportunity to choose what I've made you to be. You have the opportunity to choose shalom right now. What decision are you going to make? Process.
Right. And I think that's important. Let's go ahead and read a couple more verses, and I think we can hammer that down.
Yep.
Verse number two, then she bore again, and this time it was his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. So let's stop there. Nick, what was the curse that Adam had from God? Or what was the consequence? Let's call it that. What was the consequence that Adam had for the sin he committed?
I'm going to do a little bit of reading of it because I think it's important to have context for later on in this story too.
You bet.
Genesis 3:17, and he said to Adam, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I have commanded you, you shall not eat of. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth to you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat the bread until you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return." I'll say there was a curse between man and the ground.
Yeah.
Which gets amplified into this story. So Cain was obviously the one chosen to participate in the working of this curse.
Yeah. Isn't that something? You know, being the firstborn, the oldest, you take over the dad's business kind of a mentality. But here's what's wild is that this had to have been in some ways, almost instilled in his identity. Like Adam was given a curse, and then Eve bore a son, and it was almost as if Adam was like, okay, you're just going to do everything I do. And so instead of modeling the promise of God that Adam had and the closeness that Adam had with God, he modeled the curse and passed that down as a heritage to Cain. Like, what do you think that did to Cain's identity, to Cain's whole thought life?
Yeah, I mean, that it really, especially whenever you hold that against whatever he chose to let Abel do. You know, Abel, right. He said, all right, well, we already got someone that's working with me on this curse. What do you want to do? Okay, you want to go take care of some sheep? You can be a herdsman. That's awesome. So, I mean, really in his identity, he's just sitting there saying, of a sin that you did not participate in, you're going to be the one who's going to have to walk through this for me. It really is kind of Cain was asked to participate in the generational sin.
Yeah. Well, and okay, let's go back to Abel, right? I've never thought about this before, so I'm thinking about this in real time. This is all. You guys are getting this fresh, right, in real time. So help me put these thoughts together, okay? Cain was born, right? And when Cain was born, Adam handed down the identity of the curse. And when Adam handed down the identity of the curse, you could see the transformation that identity had on Cain. It made him cynical. It made him bitter. It made him incredibly obstinate and resistant to the things of God. I don't think Cain was initially a bad guy. I think the passing down of the curse on Cain's identity is what corrupted him. Now, if you go back, I can't even find the verse right now. I'm so scattered. But in Genesis 1 or 2, when God created Adam, remember, he created everything in 6 days, separation, filling, and blessing, and he blessed it to be a blessing to the entire world. God told Adam that you are to care for every living being. You are to are every living creature. You are to name all the living creatures. You are to rule the earth and subdue it, and you are to care for the animals of the earth and bring them order. I wonder, I've never heard this talked about before, but I wonder if Adam saw what happened when he passed the curse down to Cain, that he corrected his course, and when Abel was born, he passed the commandment down to Abel.
Yeah, I mean, I love that, especially when you're thinking about, okay, you know, back to chapter 4, verse 3 and 4. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought the firstborn of his flock and their fat. portions. So if you're really thinking about it, in the correction of this, or really that what each son was given, Cain had to bring really something that he had to labor in and had to toil and work hard for it to be able to come to life. You know, one other part to think about this, and this is relatively important. I'm just going to go ahead and say that I'm in the camp of it hadn't rained at this point in time. So there was probably some work in like, I mean, we're talking about really hard work in getting this fruit of the ground or this food of the ground to be able to come to grow. Like you're irrigating, you're out there busting, you're working hard. You're actually giving your life in to participate in this. And you bring forth what you think is a good offering to a good God. And then, you know, Abel comes forth and he isn't the one who has this lamb. God is the one who allowed for the conception of this lamb to come forth, but he delivered it to him. So really, if you're thinking about it, it's really two different offerings right here. Mm-hmm. It's the offering of a curse versus the offering of what man was asked to do by God previously, whenever he said that I will ask you to participate in this earth and subdue it. And to take care of the living creatures, you do that for me. It's just like so crazy to think about. I have never even thought about it like
this. Me neither. This is fun stuff. You guys don't know this, but before we hit record on the podcast, we were praying this evening, and we just asked the Lord to open the floodgates and Holy Spirit to just direct our thoughts in direction. And I'm going to tell you, it's pretty legit.
Yeah.
So here's what I think you're saying, Nick. Is that the temptation that Adam and Eve faced is they were tempted to get for themselves what God had promised to provide, right? And so Cain being, let's just say, carrying the identity of the curse, brought to God what he was able to get for himself. So Cain was able to get for himself the produce of the ground. And he brought it to God, saying, look, God, I'm just like you. Look what I produced. Look what I toiled for. Look what I created. So Cain brought to the Lord what he got for himself. Basically, the same temptation that Adam and Eve fell into. Whereas Abel was brought to the Lord, or let me put it this way. Abel returned to the Lord a portion of that which he was entrusted with. He returned to the Lord a portion of that which he was made a steward over. So when you are made a steward over something, you are participating in the promise of God. And whenever you have an opportunity to participate in the promise of God, you have a responsibility to return back a portion of that to God, not because God needs it, but because we ourselves need it to remind ourselves, I didn't do this myself. This all came from God. I did not create this. This all came from God. I did not make this happen. I did not toil in a curse and made for myself what God was going to provide. I took what God provided and I recognized that it was Him who is the giver of every good thing. And so I give a portion of that back to continue to have that reminder in front of me that this is all by God, from God, and I'm returning it to God. To make sure I keep that remembrance.
Yeah. I mean, even if you back up what Cain's name meant in Hebrew, which is gotten or similar to gotten, it just kind of solidifies that even more. But honestly, this is probably the first time where we've seen like two opposed views of the world come into place. So like, if we really think about it, there was an opposition of man to God previously in the story, but now we have two separate views of what man is doing in the world in order for his relationship with God to occur. And it really, the response of those things, well, I guess we really only know Abel's original response was say, God, you've given me this. I will return this to you. Cain's response actually was the creation or was the start of probably even more fracture in the world. And really just the fact that, you know, the term that Marty Solomon's always like to use, empire, comes in, but that's just right. Like sin, the dominion of sin, the dominion of breaking and fracturing of the world and wrongdoing came in. And it just seems like this is just like the story that we've had a really good introduction so far. We've had such a good introduction. And now it's like, it seems that there's two things that are just being brought to light to show opposition is growing in this creation that is relatively new.
Yeah. No, that's so good. That's so good. I want to talk to you, the listener, real quick, because if you're listening to this and you could probably tell I'm having a hard time like getting concrete language around this. And so Nick and I are just kind of tethering this thing back and forth. I want you to, if you have a better explanation of how we're trying to say this, I want you to share that with us in the comments. Make sure that if you're like, oh, Jeremiah, if you would just say it this way, I want to hear how you want to say it. I do a different podcast for real estate, and I had a guy leave a comment, just this morning, and it was like maybe 7 paragraphs long. It's so good. I love it when people participate like this. And so if you know how to put this concept into words better than we do, we want to hear it.
Yeah. Let's break the fourth wall here. Get the listeners involved.
That's right. Hey, let me ask you this, Nick, because there was nowhere. I want to address the question why Cain and Abel were bringing things to God, because there was nowhere in the conversation preceding this that God ever commanded there to be any kind of offering. We know it's not a sacrifice because there's no commandment for sacrifice yet. We don't get a commandment for sacrifice until we get to Leviticus. And so, what is this process that Cain and Abel are doing? Why are they bringing things to God?
That's a good question. I'm just going to take a guess and you can tell me.
I don't know if I have an answer either.
You can tell me, what you think is right or wrong. But I mean, I think they somewhat were honestly just doing it out of the fact that they were truly trying to serve the Lord. Like, I think that they thought that was something good to do, is to give something that they have to the Lord in sort of a term of remembrance. I don't know. I mean, because if you really put, the God's reaction, which God is allowed to have a reaction to anything that we have, like, in the end of verse four, and the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. It's like God has an option, I guess, at that point in time to sit there and say that, okay, these brothers are doing something. I didn't ask them to do this. I get to weigh through this and sit there and say, I like that. Thanks for the other one, but it's not the same to me. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
I feel like I don't know. So I have two thoughts.
Yep.
One, let's just play on this theme of the curse and the command, right? Mm-hmm. Cain had the identity of the curse, and Abel had the identity of the command, both fulfilling the things that their father started. Yep. It makes me wonder if Abel was operating in the identity of the promise, in the identity of the command, carrying on the command that God gave Adam, if it was just natural for him to bring that back to God as an offering. And at the same time, it makes me wonder if from the identity of the curse that Cain had, if he didn't observe what his brother was doing, and maybe he had jealousy, or maybe he thought, well, I'm the older one, I could do it better. Maybe he was just trying to do the same thing. I don't know. But it seemed as though when God wasn't rejecting Cain because his offering wasn't good enough.
No.
I'm sure that fruit basket was top notch. He wasn't rejecting Cain because he liked meat more than he liked fruit. I don't think that was the case at all. I think he was just pointing out, because it wasn't even a rejection of Cain. I think God was making clear the offering. Now, we have to understand this was an offering. This was not a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. This was a gift of love to the Lord. So Abel was providing this gift of love to the Lord, and Cain was just coming with whatever he had. And maybe it was a gift of offering, a gift of love to the Lord that Cain was bringing. But I think God was trying to clarify to Cain and Abel, listen, Abel's offering is accepted because it was obedience to the command and walking in the promise.
Yep.
And Cain, your offering was essentially because you wanted to show how good you can grow fruit. Your offering came from the identity of the curse, not the identity of the command. And so Abel's obedience is what I'm looking for. Abel's trust and faith, because I think in order to not just continue in the command, but to also, if you notice, Abel brought the first fruits of what he had, the first portions, the best portions, and he brought them to God. So it took an incredible amount of faith to not just continue in the command, but to also give back to God the best part, the first part of what was produced. And we have no inclination is that what Cain was doing. And so Cain was coming from a place of toil, coming from a place of work, coming from the curse that God had put on Adam, had passed down to Cain. And Cain was trying to get for himself the favor that he felt like he earned by producing his fruit. Whereas Abel said, no, I'm just giving back what you gave to me. And I think God was pointing out, I have favor on the one who acts in faith, not self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
And I think that's what God was trying to communicate to Cain and Abel.
Yeah, I love that. And it, something else just spurs in my mind. And I don't know if it also is. I guess one thing that we should bring up is that much of this is the at the root of where we're trying to get with the podcast of you need to be in the text. You need to wrestle with the text, because these are not just like stories that we should tell our children. These are stories that have deeper meanings to it. So please, if you ever have anything that you think that we say is inaccurate or you feel differently, like, let us know in the comments as well.
We want to hear it.
One thing that really pops into my mind whenever you talk about that of giving like obedience and really the command versus the curse, whenever you have it in there, is Jeremiah, we don't know that, how many sheep they have.
Right.
Okay. So like, all right, we know, all right, God kicked them out of the garden. You're going to go work. At this point in time, God pretty much had said that you are going to be able to eat or consume, fruit or the things that's coming from this vegetation. He hadn't really even told them to consume meat at this point in time. This is just setting up a little bit of context to this as well. So kicked them out of the garden. We don't really know how many lambs they have in this situation. And I don't want to say this wrong. So Abel took his firstborn. I don't know if this is like the first lamb that was procreated outside of the garden, but it might have been the only extra one that they had. But also in the simple fact that this was the only one that Abel might have been promised ever to have received in his life. He didn't know that if his flock was going to be, it was going to produce a multitude of animals. He didn't know that if his flock was going to be prosperous. He didn't know if his flock was going to grow. He took all that he had at that point in time and he gave it to the Lord.
Yeah.
And he took his soul lamb. And now I've just got some Jesus stuff popping in my mind, but sacrificing the soul lamb and stuff like that. Just all this stuff flying through my mind right now. But it's like he gave everything that he might have possibly had at that point in time. And he did that out of a pure heart.
And then we're not saying that Abel was perfect.
No.
And we're not saying that Abel was sinless by any means. because he was born under the curse of the fall. He was born into a system where relationship was broken with God, with one another, and with creation. He was born into a place where he never knew what the wholeness of shalom felt like. Mm-hmm. And yet, he still had faith in God. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I was looking at this. I was reading a little bit further because it says in verse 5, when it talks about, it says, Cain was very angry and his countenance fell because God did not have respect for Cain's offering. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? Verse 7, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at your door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. There's an interesting idea that floats around, because we're talking about this progression of sin. Mm-hmm. And as sin progresses, our temptation is to become more self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And the emphasis on that line is self. And so when I think about it in today's terms, one of the biggest temptations that we deal with today is a self-given identity, right? We want celebrity status. We want to come up with our own identity, when it comes to, our careers, right? We want to be a boss babe. We want to be a hustler. We want to be a top G. Those words mean absolutely nothing, but we want the status that are associated with those self-given identities. We want, and we come up with all these self-given identities and things that naturally should be shameful. We don't want to feel shame about them, and so we shame others for pointing it out, and we make those shameful things our own identities as well. And so we start to change the language, we start to change definitions, and we change all these different things that we try to make these self-given identities the standard for our lives and what we think is going to fulfill us through self-sufficiency is actually depleting us of everything we really need. And I think this is what Cain was doing. Cain was trying to be self-sufficient with his stuff. And when God said, no, Cain, we're not working on self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
Abel's the one that did it right. We're working on faith. We're working on surrender. We're working on trusting the story. We're working on trusting the author of the story and giving ourselves completely over to the story to find ourselves in God's story rather than our own. And Cain looked at God and he got angry about it. He said, the Lord said, Cain, why are you so angry? And why has your countenance fallen? He says, listen, if you do well, will you not be accepted? What did he say there? If you will just learn to trust the creator and learn to trust the story and learn to surrender and find yourself in the story, like Cain, don't I love you just as much as I love your dad? Just as much as I love your mom? Just as much as I love your brother? Don't I love you that much? Aren't you the prize jewel and the crown of all my creation? Mm-hmm. Like, don't you know that I have the absolute best for you? So why are you angry when I'm telling you, no, self-sufficiency isn't going to get you what you need. You need obedience, surrender, trust the creator, and trust the story so you can find yourself in my story and not your own. And that made Cain angry. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true today. Whenever we are confronted that it's not about our own self-given identities, it's about finding ourselves in the story of God that he himself has authored from the beginning of creation. What are your thoughts, Nick?
I think you're spot on. And I'm not just saying that to make you feel good. I think you really are spot on. Because, I mean, in no point in that, did God also ever say that Cain wasn't accepted, even right. for whatever he did? Even if he came out of it and he brought him something that, you know, Cain said, I brought this to you and this is what I was able to produce. So I brought it to you. He never said he wasn't accepted. He just said, you know, just do good and partner with me in the way that you're supposed to.
Right.
He's just trying to sit there and say, buddy, you know, probably word of mouth, what I told you and whatever, what I told your father whenever we started this story. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got it straight from the source that where I started this out with. And it is my definition of you, my definition of this creation is good. And if you will at least just take that and run with it, you can do some amazing things.
Yeah.
And it's just, don't give in to the opposite. That's just the stuff that's going to cloud your mind. That's the stuff that's going to try to manipulate you. And that's the stuff that's going to try to give you a false identity that is going to just consume you because it's just not for you. It's not what I made you to be. It's not what I made you to do. And guess what, buddy? You have the ability to rule over it. Like, there was not at this point in time, though their sin had entered the world, the reaction of the Lord was, you know, the removal from the garden. And then we had toil, you know, you'd have to work against the ground because you sinned against the Lord. So you couldn't be in his perfect creation, but also you sinned against the earth. So you had to then work towards producing your own kind of food source. But in that, it produced guilt. So really, at the core of what the punishment at this point in time was guilt. And whenever you were toiling, you had to actually just sit there and say that this is a reminder that I'm supposed to work back to what I was. A guy by the name Rabbi David Foreman, he wrote it in a book, and I just really like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, and we'll talk about this really getting into the next story a little bit, but there was a reaction towards it. So that guilt in you was to help honestly somewhat act as a compass to be able to push you back and point you back to what you were supposed to do. And that was to partner in God in order to be able to help restore his kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that continuous toil, that continuous work that they had to do, it really just helped them kind of understand that, you are a part of this story with the Creator. And if you could actually just move past that, if you could actually participate in his creation as opposed to just worrying about your own identity, he can really just help you, steer the course of the story in the direction that it's supposed to go.
And you know what I've noticed too, you know, God giving Cain chance after chance after chance after chance. You could even tell, I think, from the story, how Abel seemed to be at perfect peace.
Yeah.
And not perfect as in shalom, that perfect of all things, but like his peace was pretty evident, it seemed like. Like there was we have no dialogue from him, but it seems that his life was pretty, let's just say, at rest. He was at rest with his life and at rest with his work and at rest with God. Cain, on the other hand, seemed incredibly agitated all the time. And I think that's what happens whenever we continue to live our lives in a place where we are functioning from an identity that is a curse over us,
mm-hmm.
is that it constantly agitates our spirit. And I think the reason why it is agitated is because we are constantly trying to get back to that place of shalom, that place of restoration of all things. And the more we try to be self-sufficient, the more we try to operate within the identity of the curse, the more we find ourselves just kind of falling short. It's like the law of diminishing returns. Like maybe it felt good the first time, but then the second time it didn't have the same effect. Mm-hmm. And so we tried a little bit more. We tried a little bit harder. We did it for a little bit longer, trying to get the same results that we had, the same rush, the same feel-good feeling, and it doesn't work. And so I think it's the same thing is true for us today, is that for those of us, and I do it, I don't think there's, you know, good and bad people like that. I think we're in and out of both the curse and the command all the time. Nick and I go to the same house church, and I shared a story over the weekend. On Friday at our house church, we had a great lesson about whenever you find yourself in kind of an emergency situation, you know, do you take the time to really trust the Lord to bring everything back into order? When things feel like they're going out of order, are you putting your trust back in the Lord to bring it back into order? And then on Saturday, like the next day, less than 12 hours later, I am in a situation. Again, I'm a real estate agent here in Wichita, Kansas. So send all your Wichita referrals to this guy. I'm in a real estate transaction on Saturday, and it is starting to go south really fast. And the more south it goes, the more agitated I become, to the point where I am like in a panic because this deal that I've been working on for the last 6 months is like starting to fall apart, and it looks like it might fall apart completely. And I worked all day, like almost 12 hours to prevent this deal from falling apart. And at the end of the day, I was so stinking exhausted. And I was so burnt out from just being agitated and anxious about the situation. And then at that point in time, I began to remember, oh, I did not trust God to put the chaos back into order. And so I shared it on our group chat. It is amazing when we find ourselves trusting God, trusting the story, and pursuing the promise, how at peace we can be in any situation. Just at perfect peace, guarding our heart and mind, is just beautiful. But when we are constantly finding ourselves in the identity of the curse, our spirits are so completely agitated to the point where we are angry, agitated to the point where we are panicking, agitated to the point where we are just continuously losing ourselves into the chaos and becoming overly anxious about the situation. And I think this is the Cain and Abel mentality. I think Cain lived in a place of constant chaos, finding himself constantly agitated, whereas Abel found himself in a place of constant peace. What do you think, Nick?
I mean, I think that you kind of paint the picture of responses right there. And I just really kind of take it down to like verse 9, and said, and the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" And he said, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" Well, and I just want to relate that back to one verse and try to kind of land the ship, I guess, at least I'm trying to talk about here. Chapter 3, verse 9 and verse 10. Verse 9. But the Lord called to the man and said to him, "Where are you?" And in verse 10, and he said, "I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." So, similarly to kind of like what you were talking about, having your mind focused on the partnership and the presence in the story, God was sitting there asking you a question, saying, "Jeremiah, where are you? Where is your brother?" And we saw two opposite responses. Okay. Number one, let's just go ahead and sit there and say there was the response of peace. Whenever God was asking the question to Adam, "Where are you?" He didn't misplace him. He knew where he was at. He knew what he was doing. He was pretty much just saying, "You're not where you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be right here beside me. Do you eat the fruit? Okay. Well, guess what? Your response isn't to be shame. Your response is to just be right here beside me." Whenever Cain is asked, "Where is your brother Abel?" It's also somewhat of a "What did you do?" But it's why did you choose to do this? Like, why did you choose to do this in the story? And then when Abel says, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Yes, you are, because honestly, if you were acting like God told you to do, which the identity that Cain took, or the identity that Abel took on, if you're supposed to be the steward of all living creation, guess what? Your brother is a living creation underneath you, and you're supposed to be the one responsible for him.
Yeah.
So the response is, where are you? Like, where are you at, Jeremiah? Where are you at? What are you doing with your brothers? What are you doing to partner in this peace? what are you doing to partner in my creation and trying to just to nurture it and steward it? It's the same response that he's had the entire time. Even though the sin gets worse and the response gets worse, God still is asking for the exact same thing. And that's just partnership and just to trust him and to trust his peace. He knows that Cain messed up. He knew that Adam and Eve messed up. That's not what he was really focused on. It's what he was focused on is the fact that there was lack of partnership in the story that he is asking them to trust.
Yeah, that's so good. And you know what's interesting about that is I think whenever we read stories like this, we just kind of automatically assume that this whole story is about God dealing out punishments.
Yeah.
God dealing out consequences. And I don't know if that's what God was doing. I think God was just informing them of what the consequences will be.
Yeah.
And letting them know, like, hey, look, sin gets progressively worse. And at the more progressively worse sin gets, the more progressively worse the consequences become.
Yeah.
And I feel like God was warning Cain over and over again about the consequences that were coming for him. He said, look, sin's crouching at your door, but you got to rule over it. Why? Because it's like a progressive cancer that just eats away at your soul. And it causes you to do things that you would not normally do. It causes you to become something that you would not normally be. And as that is taking place, it just makes me recognize and realize just how great the love of God is over us, how God really is always there, coaching us, training us, leading us, guiding us, helping us to understand, don't go this route because this route is only ever going to be destructive. I talk to guys all the time who, a lot of times guys will ask me, men specifically will ask me, hey, I just watch a lot of stuff online that I shouldn't watch. I don't want to say words that'll get us demonetized if we ever become monetized one day. Just joking. So a lot of guys will come to me and say, hey, I watch a lot of pornography online and I feel like I shouldn't be watching all of this stuff. And I just try to talk to him. I said, man, you gotta really get rid of this stuff because this is one of those, sins that people think is a victimless crime. But what it's doing to your heart is going to lead you into places that are be progressively worse than anything you thought it could ever be. And then the consequences will become progressively more than you ever wanted to even obtain. And I've had to walk with guys. I'm telling you, and more times than I even care to admit, I've had to walk with guys who did not turn away from their sin, who did not, what did he say to Cain? He said, you have to rule over it. Their sin was crouching at your door, but you have to rule over it. And I had to walk with guys who refused to rule over their sin. And instead, they allowed themselves to just be completely taken over by it. And they ended up committing crimes that they never even considered would ever be something they would ever do. And the consequences that they incurred from these crimes, from a victimless crime, turned into a victimed crime, and the consequences became a lifetime sentence because of it.
Yeah.
And if we don't stop to recognize and understand, God is not trying to punish us for anything. God is warning us over and over again about the realities of sin. God is warning us over and over again about the progressive nature of sin, the destructive nature of sin, and the progressively irreversible consequences that can come if we don't rule over it like we should.
Yeah, but he's also reminding us that we can rule over it.
Right, like, and he's doing so out of love for us.
Yeah. He didn't sit there and say that if you keep doing this, it's going to get worse and you don't have a chance. He said, you can do it. You can do it. And some, maybe that's something, it's something that we all need to hear, right?
Right.
Like, what's the Lord's response is that you can rule over this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to define you.
Right. That's so good. I think that's a great stopping point. We're about an hour.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Nick, every podcast is my next favorite podcast. This has been my favorite one yet.
Yeah, mine's, I mean, I'm going to have to listen to the start of it. We were spitting some stuff I've never heard before. I loved it.
I know. And if we are completely wrong, please tell us, because we would like to know.
Yeah.
We would like to know. Well, awesome. Nick, thanks again for another great day. Hey, you, the listener, thank you so much for joining us again for another episode of the Jude 23 Community Podcast. It's clarity. At least it kind of was clarity today of all things. It's clarity for those who are curious or confused about all things Christianity. Mm-hmm. What are your last words, Nick?
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks for listening. We appreciate you. God bless.
God bless.